This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
Forever and ever.
So Jerry is a weasel today.
Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050. Making your drive home a lot more fun.
Hour 2 Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Craig Button, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Ray Ferraro will join us here in a moment to tee up Game 1 tonight of the Cup Final. We're looking back on what happened over the course of the weekend as well. The London Knights won the Memorial Cup. And when you look at the way the Knights have played the past 2 months, only one team has beat them over the past month and a half, 2 months, and it was Owen Sound in the first round of the OHL playoffs.
Ryan McGill's team.
That's right, because they swept Kitchener, swept Erie, swept Niagara, and then beat all three teams whenever they played them at the Memorial
Cup. They've been dominant. And I was worried for them a little bit last night. Like, you know, you're sitting there, and they're down 2-1, and they did have chances, but you never know. Like, in a one game, that's the thing. In a one game playoff, you never know. The goalie allows a bad goal, a bad call. You know, anything can happen. Just a bad game from a team. They get up that day and they don't feel very good. And I kept thinking to myself, boy, this is getting a little longer. And then was it Dvorak scored?
With four, 2-2. Under 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
How about when Tkachuk hit the post in overtime?
I know.
On that redirect. That was when I said, uh-oh, it might not be London's day.
That's what I kept thinking, too. Like, they've done everything but score. Marner hits a crossbar. You're like thinking, this is coming back down the other way. Yeah. And the goaltender, Parsons played outstanding. Like, he made some massive saves.
He did. He's a good
for
goalie.
London. He's a very good goalie.
He's drafted pretty high, I think.
Second round.
Yeah.
But You know, it's interesting. I was impressed with them. I like watching at that level. I didn't have a dog in the fight at all or a dog in the race. I literally just watched as a fan. It was good hockey. It was fast hockey. A lot of talent there. And that's the future of the NHL, a lot of those guys.
That's right. Oh, and again, sure. If you're a Maple Leaf fan, you're looking at Mitch Marner, who ended up as the MVP of the Memorial Cup, MVP of the OHL playoffs, MVP of the OHL regular season, and CHL Player of the Year. That's as good as it gets. Like Craig said in the previous hour, only one player in the history of the Canadian Hockey League has achieved that. Now, you need a lot of things to break your way. You need to win the OHL playoffs probably to get the MVP. You need to win the Memorial Cup to get the MVP. But Brad Richards did that, I guess, back in 2000.
2000, yep.
Yeah, where they beat Barry, I think, in the finals.
Oceanic, yep. Yeah, Sheldon Keefe was on that team.
That's right. That was in Halifax.
Well, interestingly enough, too, when you think about it, too, and you think about... You know, Eric Lindros won a Memorial Cup and was a dominant player, but he only played half the year. So he didn't get the MVP of the league.
Right, right. Well, and it's now true. We wait to see where Marner falls in line here with the Maple Leafs. And, again, it was probably a bit of a bittersweet weekend for Maple Leaf fans because you see Mitch Marner doing what he's doing. But then the Marlies go down in five.
Yeah.
And let's face it. That was a disappointment. They were coming into the playoffs in the American Hockey League thinking Calder Cup or bust.
Yeah.
Because they were that good during the regular season, and they ran into a good Hershey team that caught their number, but they kind of escaped the previous two rounds as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they
never
escaped
looked
Albany,
that smooth, right?
Young team. I think some of their inexperience may have shown through. I didn't see all the games, so it's hard to label them that, but I have been sent notes by people who did go to the games and that said that they felt that they were kind of young and looked their age at times during the game, maybe pushed around a little bit, maybe didn't stay in that little physical battle here or there. And that's got nothing to do with the character of them or anything like that. It's just more, you know, a team that looked overwhelmed at times.
I didn't know, and I saw, you know, a lot of the games against Hershey. I saw a couple games against Albany. I don't know who their go-to guy was. Who was their go-to guy? Who was their guy that said, we're going to settle it down? I've talked about when we won in 2001. We had Marty Murray and Daryl Scoville. Daryl Scoville settled it down on the back end, and Marty Murray took care of everything else up front and back.
He's an unreal AHL player, Marty Murray.
Oh, well, he was unbelievable.
Unreal.
I mean, I've been asked this many times about best captains. I'll tell you what, Marty Murray's right up there amongst the best I've ever seen.
Yeah. Let's bring in Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Ray on Overdrive is a presentation of Sierra So Joint Formula 14. Ray, I think we've spoken about Mitch Marner in the past, but when you consider the accolades that this kid has compiled this year, he won everything. He swept the MVP race. Where do you stand now on what the best move will be for him come the fall?
Well, you know, I'm always keep him back until you just can't. And so I've always felt that, you know, he would probably be best served and not harmed by going back. Yet it's been almost outrageous, his production. And so now by the sheer force of his numbers, I've slid more the other way, which I don't generally do. And I guess my thought is that in camp, he's going to perform how he's going to perform. But it would be really hard to send him back off the hop, given that, you know, what's he going to do next year that he hasn't done already? And so how far you keep him or what you do with him once he's there, I think his play will determine it. What's really kind of crazy about it is that because of the way he's played, he might knock somebody back to the American League because they have that option, and that he doesn't have really any great options other than to stay, because they can't have a whole team of 19 and 20-year-olds. They can't have a whole bunch of forwards that are between 5'9 and 5'11. They're never going to touch a puck. And so if he performs well at camp, somebody might get bumped backwards that might not otherwise be.
Two-parter, like kind of like what Darren Helm comes and wins a Stanley Cup and he's back to the minors the next year because they had options on him. A similar situation. Did you played with Sylvain Turgeon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
What was he like, you know, coming into the league as a young player, and not just him, but also other young players you saw come into the league and you knew they were talented and good, but where they ran up, what that point in time when it looked like they were running up against a bigger challenge than they were able to handle?
I think the biggest thing I noticed was, or would notice, is, and I'll even use myself as an example, not that I was, you know, of that stature, but I scored 100 goals my last year at junior, and I went to the American League 4 days into camp. And what I found is the same thing that most young guys find is it wasn't my ability to score. It wasn't my ability to make a play. It was when I didn't have the puck, I didn't know how to get it back. And because I had it all the time previously. And when I didn't have it, I didn't really know how to defend because, well, nobody really defends the same way they do at the pro game. So when you're a young guy, you know, you're probably not going to score like you're used to. And then you don't really have enough in your bucket to fill in around what you're not scoring. And so pretty soon the coach can't play you enough, and now your minutes start to slide, and then you slide into a position where you've got no confidence. And it's funny that it's almost like a waterfall. It just goes straight downhill. You can't stop it. And pretty soon you haven't scored in 20 games, and you don't even know what the heck you're doing out there.
Well, and for obvious reasons, we're always focusing on these young players in the American Hockey League or junior or in Europe or college because they're so unknown and because their ceilings are so high and there's a lot more optimism that comes with it. But that's not the reality of the salary cap world and guaranteed contract world. Leupel is still under contract. Brooks Like is still under contract. McCulloch is under contract. Colin Greening is under contract.
Right.
These guys aren't just going to show up to camp and say, "Hey, Mitch, there's your spot, buddy. Like, we'll go ride the buses for you." And, you know, Lamoriello somehow became a magician last year and found a way to make a lot of players disappear. And I would guess they would probably like to do that again if they can. But at some point, there are going to be players who are going to say, "I'm not injured. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
I want to play. So play me." So what happens when that inevitable conversation pops up? And that's the question, right, Ray?
He's gone.
And his phone dropped. I thought he was thinking that's such a dumb comment you just made. So forget it. I'm out of here. It's his phone that dropped.
Well, you gave him an opportunity.
I gave him as like long as I could.
You gave him the silence. And then the best part is you go, and that's the question, right? Like, just in case he was like, is this guy done talking?
Exactly. He was thinking I was taking that long pause just for dramatic effect.
That is the greatest part. I mean,
instead,
we'll have to record. We'll play that for O-Dog tomorrow.
Oh he'll yeah, grill that's me great. For that.
That's not your fault.
It
that's
wasn't
Ray's
my fault.
Phone.
Yeah,
but
it's,
the
it's
best
Ray's
part
stupid
is,
phone.
Is that you are, I mean, you put it on a tee for him, and then it's just silence, dude. And I could watch. I was watching you go, is he still there? Or
I
is
know.
He like? And then he was gone.
It's interesting, though. 108 goals coming out of junior.
That's a great point.
It is a great point, and I think that that's why we continually say, you know, for Mitch, I don't think there's any question he's coming in and he's going to start the year with the Leafs. I mean, he's not going to fall on his face in the summer. He's
no,
not going to fall on his face in training camp. But it's going to be at that 12, 15, 18 game mark.
The process. And
so to me, it's not is he ready to challenge for a spot in the league. The question is he ready to have staying power in the league? And that's where we got to go through the beginning of the year and see where the chips fall.
Well, and furthermore, not that it ever was a debate, and I know it wasn't around this table.
Right.
But if Nylander's a winger, which he is, and Marner's a winger, they're not taking Patrick Laine first overall. They're not taking another winger. Matthews is a lock of all locks. Don't let them fool you. Don't let them try to deceive you.
They're not trying to fool anybody, are they?
Well, you know how they play the game. They're not going to announce it, which is the right.
Yeah.
That's partially a TV thing probably, too, that the league doesn't want the suspense to be taken out of it. But they're taking Matthews. Right, Craig? That's the question.
I'll fall right down if they don't take Matthews. I'll have a lot of fodder
okay. As
to why they're not taking Matthews if they don't.
All right, I think we have Ray
back. We have
back,
him back. But... Then, are you going to explain to him what happened on our end?
I can't. You want to just play the clip? All right,
yeah,
Ray,
we've
got to
play
there?
The clip.
Do you have us, Ray?
I got you here, yeah.
Okay, because you
Jamie
left.
Knows where I'm in Pittsburgh. Jamie knows where I was.
Yeah.
Where I lost that call.
The tunnel?
Oh, you betcha.
Because you left me hanging.
It is the greatest hang of all time because he thought you were thinking and just like waiting to like, you know, come with this huge response. And then he follows up with.
Here, let's just
play.
You got to
listen to this.
I want to play. So play me. So what happens when that inevitable conversation pops up? And that's the question, right, Ray?
He's gone.
His phone dropped. He's out. You just screwed me there royally.
Hey, you know what? The last two times I was in Pittsburgh, that tunnel, so it got me for this interview, the last was the Batista bat flip. So I entered into the tunnel, and it said, and my phone wouldn't refresh. And I'm like, what is going on? What is happening in the game? And he had just hit the home run or that crazy play before. It was delayed for like, no, it was the crazy play before. Because for about 20 minutes, right, it was delayed.
Right.
And I was stuck in the tunnel and my phone wouldn't update. And then I got out of the tunnel and then the score had changed because he just hit the home run. That tunnel's vicious.
What a world we live in where 20 years ago, you'd have to wait until the 11 p.m. Sports Center or pick up a paper the next day. And now we're so rattled because we can't get instant updates.
Every 90 seconds.
Yeah. The tunnel has to be basically taken down.
It is a gritty tunnel, though.
It's ruining us. All right, you're in Pittsburgh ahead of game one tonight.
Yeah.
X factors for both teams from your standpoint. I'm sure you guys will get into it all night. But if the Pens win, why? If the Sharks win, why?
I'm going to start with the Sharks because I think that most people think that's more unlikely. I'm going to say they win if they can stay on top of the puck and they can keep Pittsburgh's offense from just racing out into a track meet. If they're able to do that, I think San Jose's got a really good chance. Their defense is better than what Pittsburgh had to face in the last round. I think that's how San Jose can win. For Pittsburgh, it's that they just play at such a relentless pace that San Jose can't keep up, that San Jose breaks down. San Jose's third line can't hold serve against Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh can be, I mean, they've been as good as anybody for for months, but so is San Jose, and I think because they play out west, people have forgotten that.
I think there's a lot of validity in that. Like, hockey people are well aware of what's going on with San Jose, and I've been a little bit surprised because the hockey guys we talk to regularly, including the guys in this room, everyone seems to be on San Jose.
Yeah,
a lot of people are picking San Jose, and I think a lot of the fair weather fans, quote unquote, were tracking what Pittsburgh's been doing because they're on the East Coast. They have superstardom in terms of Crosby and Malkin, more familiarity there. I think particularly in this market, obviously people were tracking Kessel and what he's been doing, and the Sharks games happened to coincide when the Raptors were playing. So I think there's a lot of people in Toronto snapping out of it saying, okay, what's this San Jose team all about right now?
Right.
And get ready, because they can really play.
They can play. They've got good size. You know, everybody's on Marty Murray or on Matt Murray in goal. Martin Jones is good, too. And who would have thought? I'd like to know, what is the least experience for two starting goaltenders in a final series? This has got to be close, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Neither of these guys have played at all. And they're both really similar to me. They're built the same. They're tall and kind of lean, and they both have really calm demeanors. And it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to a series that I don't think too many people had at the start of the new year. Anyway,
I agree. I mean, Martin Jones and Matt Murray, they are built the same, and they both have that calm demeanor about them. Ray, you know Marty Jones very well, and he's a laid-back guy. Everyone you talk to out of Pittsburgh is Matt Murray. A bomb could drop in the room, and he doesn't react. Like, that's how laid-back and really poised and composed he is. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that battles out. I mean, Murray just turned 22 the other day. I think Jonesy is 26. And like you said, they don't have a ton of experience in this situation. But at least Jones played 65 games this year. He knows... he knows how to play every night. Murray here is—he's still trial by fire here in the finals.
Ray, you played with a lot of different goalies, some fiery, some really calm. As a player and as an opponent, was there one you preferred over the other?
Oh yeah, I wanted to play against the hothead for sure. I wanted to be in there digging at his hands when the puck was being covered up, because you know. They might lose a screw and get distracted a bit. The guys that bugged me were the ones that just, like, they were just always really, they looked like they were in charge all the time. They looked like they were, without stating they were in charge, they just looked like they were the boss. And those guys always, they seemed, like a guy like Mike Richter, he always seemed to be really composed to me. You know, that bothered me. Like, I couldn't find a, you know, in my head, couldn't find a weakness. And with the guys that were really fiery, you know, literally they'd be hacking away at your legs all the time. And you're like, well, if they're worrying about me, they can't be too concerned with everything else going around. Maybe we can get one on them. Yet they seem to do fine too. It's almost like a golf swing. I don't think there's one perfect golf swing, but there's one swing for everybody. You can't make Ron Hextall, you couldn't have made Ron Hextall play like Mike Richter. And, I mean, for a period of time, Hexy was as good as anybody till his body just broke down on him. And he was as crazy and fiery as anybody. Hell, our two goalies, like, Noodles used to be so quiet, right? You two guys were there, like, you guys were, nobody would say anything. The two goalies were really quiet. Noodles was putting his pads right in the perfect spot. You couldn't touch those. You couldn't touch Hexy's stick. You couldn't touch his gloves. And it was like they were really in their zone. And there's other guys that just babble away the whole time, and they just seem like they were unconcerned. But one's not right. It's just the way they're wired.
You're right, though, buddy. The Reggie Dunlop routine doesn't work so well if the goalie doesn't flinch. If you're chirping the guy and he just says, whatever, I don't care. It doesn't have the same effect, right?
No, it doesn't. You know, like... I like, you know, you'd get in there and, you know, or I'd get in there and you'd chirp at guys and they'd chirp back at you. And one of the best I ever got was from Gar Snow. And so Snowy's so big, right? So I was in front of the net, and he says during the play, "Are you trying to screen me?" I almost wanted to jump up and down to try and get in his eye line or something. He wasn't even the least bit rattled.
That's a great chirp.
Yeah.
That's an outstanding chirp. All right, buddy. Well, enjoy it tonight, and we'll break down game one tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Yep, we'll be doing that. Look forward to it. And it's been a while since two teams that I think have such unknown to them, even though you know Crosby and Malkin meet in the finals. I think that's kind of cool. So I'm hoping it's a great series.
Should be outstanding. Enjoy, buddy.
See you, boys.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. And Ray, on Overdrive was a presentation of CRSO Joint Formula 14. So Scotty Mac will join us in about 10 minutes. The Yankees are in town. The Jays have been playing much better. They've been winning more games. Their luck seems to be turning in a better direction. But John Gibbons, I guess, was asked about the bullpen because it went into extra innings yesterday.
Yeah.
And Dickey came out in the sixth because he was brilliant through five.
Yeah.
And then he went out and he was the personification of a pitching machine all of a sudden. He just started getting hit and it went south. And Gibbons had a great explanation or a great clip on where his mind is at going into tonight's game if they have to go to the bullpen. So we'll let you hear that. And we'll tee up the series with Scotty Mac. Masai Ujiri will join us in just over an hour. We will recap a great Raptors season and what happened on Friday night down at the ACC. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Blue Jays are back at 500. They're 7-3 over their last 10. They had a chance to sweep the Red Sox and couldn't get the job done in extra innings. Drew Storen continues to be just a gas can. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Storen, and we'll ask Scotty Mac about that in just a couple of minutes. But Ryan Tepera has been called up, so they needed some help in the bullpen because the bullpen got used up over the weekend and certainly yesterday. And John Gibbons, he just held court about a half an hour ago down at the Rogers Center ahead of the game tonight. And he was asked about Devin Travis, who won't be in the lineup tonight. And Travis has played really well since he got called up, but he's coming off rehab. He's still a young kid, so they want to make sure that they manage the amount of times he plays. And then he was asked about Tepera coming up and how that might possibly help the bullpen going into a game like this one tonight with the Yankees in town. And this is the way everything broke loose down at the Rogers Center.
Well...
Is that a good way to
put it? Yeah. You know, we're in a bind in our pen. You know, they've been all getting used up pretty good the last few days. We played so many close games. So we're really desperate for some pitching tonight. So we need a good one out of Estrada. But Tepera's here. I mean, if needed, he needs to throw a few innings the same way with Giroto. And then we'll see where we're at with the end of the game.
The cackle off the top. There's nothing better than the Gibby cackle. It's my favorite audio bit.
He's a beauty, that guy. Is he inching his way back into solid ground territory?
Well, he got the kiss of death, which was the compliments from Atkins and Shapiro a couple of weeks ago. The vote of confidence from those two.
Which is basically...
We're going to kill you here soon.
Yeah.
You may not be around much longer. It's amazing how GMs and presidents can just blatantly lie about how secure their coach or manager is. But I guess you got to take that at face value. And listen, they're back at 500. It's a long season. They still got about 100 games left to play. In fact, 100 right on.
Really?
And they're in the mix. I mean, even if they don't catch Boston, if you believe that the Red Sox are the real deal, and there's a big enough sample size to believe that, okay, let's say you concede, and I'm not there yet, don't get me wrong, but just for hypothetical purposes, you concede the American League East to Boston. Well, you got two wild card spots that you're going to fight for all summer, and they're 3.5 out of the wild card. So just keep rolling, right?
Keep grinding away.
Don't you think John Gibbons just looks at this as house money? His situation with the Blue Jays. First of all, he got a second opportunity.
Right.
Last year, they go on a magnificent run. Now there's all the questions about his job security and whatnot. He's been around long enough where you just kind of just go... Okay,
yeah, how much you can do?
You know what? Can that's what I mean by he's just it's all house money for him now, isn't it?
He never seems flustered to begin with, but I think you're right. The fact that he went on the run he went on last year, and he's not a stupid guy.
No.
He knows that Shapiro and Atkins probably didn't walk in here thinking they're going to be connected to the hip with John Gibbons for the next 5 or 10 years.
When John Gibbons gets fired, I can tell you exactly how the press conference, not exactly, but I can tell you this will be uttered at the press conference. Well, you know what? You know, we gave him a chance. He wasn't our guy. We wanted to see what he was about. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So
they're going to be talking about how noble they were in giving John Gibbons an opportunity to stay on.
I mean, if you take over a team, Craig, you've been in this situation. If you take over a situation like that, you want to instill people that you trust. And you know, so you inherit some people. You want to see, you give them an opportunity, but if you don't like what they're doing, you move on from them because ultimately you're the one that puts the stamp on the team and you got to answer for it. So, yeah, you're right. Gibbons may be working with house money, but he's seems like, I don't know. I just like his demeanor. I think
he's such
amazing.
An easy guy to like.
Exactly.
It, you know, it doesn't mean he's the greatest manager in the world, but hey, they won, what, 93 games last year, got to game 6 of the ALCS. So,
yeah.
He's not the worst manager in the game. He's not the best manager in the game. And Shapiro and Atkins are probably in a win-win situation anyway, because if he wins, hey, great. We got a winner here. If they lose, hey, we were planning on going in a different direction anyway, and that door opens. Let's bring in Scott MacArthur, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter, and this Baseball Insider is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. We played the Gibbons clip from about 45 minutes ago where he was asked about Tapera coming up in the bullpen, and he just said, hey, we're in a bit of a bind. I mean, how much pressure is on Estrada to go at least 6 tonight?
I'd say a lot, because if he can't, you're going to be seeing a whole heck of a lot of Ryan Tapera and Chad Girardeau, and I don't know if that's a good idea in a game you're trying to win, but this is what happens, guys. I mean, they're in a run right now where they haven't had an off day since Monday, and they have played consistently close games in the Bronx, maybe with the exception of the middle game. They played, obviously, a ton of close games against the Red Sox this weekend, went into extra innings yesterday, had that crazy game on Saturday that was 9 innings but felt like it might have been 18. So guys are worn out. I think they want, as best they can, to stay away from Roberto Osuna tonight. 4 out of the last 5 games he's appeared in. Joe Biagini has thrown a lot. Gavin Floyd needs to sit. Probably even Jesse Chavez. And if they could stay away from Drew Storen, who's thrown on back-to-back days, they would like to do that as well. So if Estrada can give them 7 or 8, John Gibbons would be thrilled.
Well, you mentioned Drew Storen, and I don't think there's any doubt for me anyway. This has been the most disappointing story so far this year. Putting the record aside, he was a guy. I was fine with the trade, and I'm still fine with the trade, because what people forget, those that cry for Ben Revere, is that Michael Saunders has been very good. And if Saunders is in left, where were you going to play Revere anyway? Edwin was going to be your DH. We know what happened with Colabello. But still, if everything played out the way it was going to play out, Revere was likely going to be a utility guy anyway.
Well, Brian, and just let me add to that. There seems to be this notion that just because Ben Revere is fast, he's the obvious leadoff hitter. And, I mean, that might have been the way to approach it in 1985. But Ben Revere doesn't get on base enough to take advantage of that speed. He did in his 2-month stint in Toronto, but he's not a guy who walks and all that. So I think the notion that he was the prototypical leadoff hitter was a little overblown. So you're right. I mean, it was a trade. They took a superfluous asset and moved it for a position of need. It's just unfortunate from their point of view that the guy who's filled that position of need has not been good.
Well, and that leads me to the question about where we go here with Drew Storen. He's got a 7.02 ERA, a 1.68 whip. We're not talking about a 10 or 15 game sample size. He's really been a disaster. How far do they go with their patience with him?
Well, I mean, what you've seen is they've drawn him right back. I mean, he's not thrown in a high leverage situation in quite a while. In fact, he pitched in yesterday's game and he threw in Saturday's game. And in his appearance on Saturday, it was his first time out there in 8 days. So they have pulled right back on him and are trying to essentially rebuild him from the ground up. And I remember talking to Pete Walker, the pitching coach, about a month ago, and I asked him, I said, what's going on here? And he just wasn't entirely sure. And then as you you know, kind of floated around the team and talked to different people, Storen was telling you publicly that he was going to come out of it and he wasn't worried. But different people were saying, no, there's old video in Washington being looked at here. They're trying to figure out what has happened to his fastball velocity. And this guy has thrown 94, 95 over the course of his career, and he's coming up 91, 92. He has started to hit 93 on a more consistent basis, so it's coming back a little bit. But the one identifier, Brian, that people have, I mean, you talk about mechanics and delivery all you want. It's the one that stood out to me because I'm no pitching coach, but I went back and looked at tape. The guy doesn't look like he's in shape to me. If you go back and watch Washington film from even last year, but definitely 2 or 3 years ago, he looks doughy, and he looks maybe 20, 25 pounds more than he was. And I don't know if that affects things to what extent. I mean, your boy Barty Colon has done it for years, you know, with some extra carriage. But he just doesn't look like the guy that pitched for the Nationals at all. And I think all that you can do at this point, if you're in that front office and you're in that dugout, is, you know, back him off the high leverage stuff, which they have done, hope that he finds his groove in the lower leverage situations, and then begin to ease him back into a more crucial role if he comes around. Otherwise, he's a $6.5 million arm kind of anchoring the back end of the bullpen, which is unfortunate because that's not why he was brought to Toronto.
So Scott, two questions here. Number one, okay, so they were trying to get a need. So now you've explained the first part of it, that they're trying to rebuild him. Okay, that's great. My first question is, if they don't rebuild him, where do they go? And my second question is, has this guy ever been a frontline reliever?
Huh. Well, I'll answer the second one. Yes, he has. I mean, he had almost 100 career saves in 5-plus seasons with the Nationals. And was one of the better closers. He has a 30-save season under his belt in Washington. But Craig, where he got a bit of a bad rep were for some playoff failures that he had with the Nationals dating back 2-3 years ago. And obviously he imploded when Washington went and got Jonathan Papelbon at the trade deadline last year. So, I mean, maybe there's a bit of a psyche situation going on in crucial moments, high-pressure situations. Maybe part of this is the fact that he's an impending free agent for the first time in his career, and he's thinking about his next contract, and things aren't going well, and so stuff snowballs downhill. What do they do if he doesn't find his groove? Man, you know, you can throw him up on the trade market if you want, but there are 29 other teams who are going to take a pass on that. You know, I mean, he's owed $8 million over the course of the year. The Nationals ate $1.50 of that when they made the deal. So the Jays are paying $6.50. I just don't see teams being willing to take that on. It's a bit of an albatross right now. It's an unfortunate situation in the sense that, you know, they're paying Storen all this money to underperform. And then they stuffed $2 million in Franklin Morales' pants. And he's hardly been available to them at all this year. And, you know, this is a team that isn't exactly swimming in extra currency as it approaches the trade deadline. But it could be that they've got to go out and look for a big league arm. And maybe that means trading a prospect or two. I wonder what they're thinking about, and I'll throw an example out there. I wonder what they're thinking about the future of Dalton Pompey. Is this a guy who's going to make the big leagues and be a successful outfielder with the Toronto Blue Jays? Or is he a prospect for trade? It's really going to depend on where they are at in the standings a few weeks down the road as you get closer to July 31st, August 1st, and not just the number of games you are in arrears of either the division or the wild card, but also it could come down to how many teams are in between you and that coveted playoff spot. Because if you have to do a bunch of leapfrogging, it gets a whole heck of a lot more complicated. So I really think, as annoying as it is to say, it's still too early at this point to be thinking blockbuster trade at this point to address certain needs.
With Scott MacArthur, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter, ahead of the game tonight and the series, which kicks off tonight with the Yankees in town. Marco Estrada on the mound for the Jays. I mean, they've been picking up wins. The bats have been heating up. Russell Martin in particular. You and I, we talked about this last week when you were in studio. I'm not sure I've seen a start like that. Like, we were talking 6-7 weeks where he couldn't get past first base.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it was tough to watch. And then all of a sudden he absolutely unloaded over the weekend. And he's such a huge catalyst for them. And I do wonder if we know what Josh Tolley's all about. We know he's absolutely a subpar catcher, and he's there for Dickey, but he's got to get a couple of more starts here or there. If Martin starts to heat up, though, could you see his workload starting to increase?
Oh, I don't think much beyond what it already is, Brian, because it is effectively at this point Martin 4 days, Tolley for the Dickey starts. And if you do the math over the course of the season, you know, that's, you're getting into 125, 130 game territory there for Russell Martin. So they have to be very careful, and there are going to be day games after night games, or if there's a favorable matchup for Martin in the day game after a night game, Tolley might see the odd night game before a day game start. They've got to be careful with that, because Martin's not a kid anymore either, and in this day and age, there really isn't any catcher in baseball. Maybe Yadier Molina, but there really aren't a lot of catchers in baseball who grind it out for more than 125 or 130 games. So, I mean, it's tempting if that bat is going, but you got to remember as well that if you ride that catcher too hard, even when he's hitting well, he's going to begin to wear down in the dog days of summer. You've got to try to protect that asset as you head into August and September in what you hope will be crucial games. So it's really about monitoring playing time. But, yeah, he is swinging the bat better. And with Travis back, although Travis is getting a night off tonight as they try to ease him back in, with Martin swinging it better and Travis back, you're starting to see that lineup lengthen just a little bit. And obviously they got to hope that, you know, Martin keeps swinging well.
Good stuff, buddy. Enjoy it tonight. We'll do it again later in the week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, boys.
Scott MacArthur, the Baseball Insider, is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, conveniently located at the QEW and Trafalgar Road in Oakville. What I did like is that they did make a substitution later in the game. When Dickey was out, Tolley came out, and they put Martin in. And that's what I was talking about with Scotty, is usually they're very cautious, and I can understand why, but when they're giving him a day off, he's out. Like, they're not playing him.
Right.
But if he's starting to swing and they're getting deeper into the year and they realize they've really got to start turning it up, the more Martin and the less Tolley is always going to be about the best case scenario, right? Well, it's always going to be the best case scenario.
Well, to his point about Storen, right, trying to get him up to speed, maybe that's what they're trying to do with Russell Martin too, right? Because when he's up to speed, he's a real...
He's a huge catalyst for them.
Sure is.
Huge catalyst.
And I think Scott made a great point too, just in terms of talking about... My question on Storen is, can he be that go-to guy? Like, you know, they brought in Papelbon, who slapped around Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper, yeah.
And they kept Papelbon and said, we're trading Storen.
That's
so
right.
There's a little bit there, and that's where my question was, is can he carry the load of a lead guy?
Well, and there was debate throughout spring training. Who would actually be the closer? Would it be Storen because of his history, or would they go back to Osuna? And clearly they made the right call, because Osuna has been lights out all year. He's the real deal, that kid. Like, he is legit, and I don't know if he'll ever be a starter. I think he'll probably stay in that closing role. He's going to get paid a lot of money. I hope it's here in Toronto, because he's the real deal. He's the only consistent arm they have out of the bullpen right now. Biagini's been better recently, but... Anyway, Yankees
well, we
in town
to
tonight.
We talked to Steve Phillips about Osuna, mm-hmm. you know, maybe trying to be
a starter
and then going to the bullpen. It's usually, you know, that's usually what happens. But Osuna wants to be that guy.
He wants to be the closer, right? And he's not a guy with, like, four or five different pitches. So usually when you're in the bullpen, you come in, you throw smoke, you hit your spots, and you get out of there.
Do they have the assets to upgrade their bullpen?
They do, but this is where Shapiro and Atkins have to make the decision. Do they really want to go for it right now?
Right.
Like, how much do they want to really put all their eggs into the 2016 season's basket, right?
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking Noah Syndergaard.
Oh, don't even go down that road. Sorry, Dickey. The thing is, Dickey's...
No, but, like, that was what happened. I mean, they gave up an ace. They gave up a stud.
Oh, Syndergaard's
you know, to go for it. You better know what you have before you start moving.
So they gave up a... Tyler Seguin?
Well,
oh, no question. Noah Syndergaard's
he might
stud.
Be better. I mean, my buddy actually hit the perfect analogy over the weekend. He said they may have traded Randy Johnson away. Like that.
Really?
That's This kid hits 100 on the on the clock.
It's unbelievable. Like it's,
and he's a starter. Like he's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
But Dickey, to be fair to Dickey, when you look at his numbers,
he's been consistent,
right? He's been fine. Gives you 200 innings. His ERA is around 3.8, 3.9. He's
basically because if you misjudge the prospect and you misjudge
where your
the
team
timing
is.
I mean that's not a double whammy. That's that knocks you right to the ground.
That's an unemployment line that will be waiting for you. All right, we got some prop bets. We got a puzzle to get to. Gary Bettman is currently speaking to the masses down in Pittsburgh. We'll let you know what he had to say about expansion, about whether or not it's possible to win back-to-back cups anymore in this era in the NHL. We'll get to that. Masai Ujiri will join us at 6:30 this afternoon. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. All right, Masai Ujiri will join us at 6:30. Get his thoughts on how he would react and how he would describe the season that just played out for the Raptors, and maybe get into some of his plans for the upcoming offseason, including what he's going to do with DeMar DeRozan, what's he going to do with Bismack Biyombo. He's got two picks in the first round. So we'll get into a number of things with Masai Ujiri. That's coming up in about 40 minutes. So Gary Bettman is hosting his annual State of the Union down in Pittsburgh. He had a game one tonight. And the Sharks are trying to win their first ever Stanley Cup. The Penguins are back in the Cup final for the first time in 7 years. And Bettman was asked about parity throughout the league, how difficult it is to win a Stanley Cup, let alone repeat as a Stanley Cup winner. And here's what he had to say.
Our league is so competitive that the most difficult trophy to win once also is the one that has become virtually impossible to win in consecutive years. There hasn't been a repeat champion since the Detroit Red Wings of 97 and 98, and there haven't even been repeat finalists since the Red Wings and the Penguins traded championships in 08 and 09.
Do you think they like that in the NHL?
Absolutely.
They love parents.
The whole thing about the cap was to give everybody a chance to think that, you know, you do things the right way, then you can hoist the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's what the salary cap is really, you know, trying to keep everything as equal and as level as possible. That's what it is.
We talk about it on a daily basis. If the Toronto Maple Leafs had no cap, they could just buy everything, right? That's what they wanted.
But they used to buy everything.
And so the Rangers. Remember Glenn Sather? Would complain when he was in Edmonton, said, if I had New York Rangers,
I'd
win the cup every year. And he had an $83 million payroll.
But he went to New York and didn't even make the playoffs.
Well, I know.
Well, in Detroit, like people don't
that's true, though.
Cite the fact that Detroit usually had the highest payroll. Like people think it was the Maple Leafs. It was Detroit had like a $75 million payroll.
I think one year they had an $85 million payroll.
Yeah, huge.
The Flyers were like $83
million. Yeah.
I mean, the one year in Calgary, we were at $31 million and you're trying to find a way to be competitive. And you are. I mean, you got players that are competitive and whatnot. But, I mean, when you have a $50 million disparity,
That's difficult, man. You're climbing uphill.
It is. But that's... I remember during the lockout being a player rep and sitting down with an owner. We had owners' meetings with player reps, and the owner said, like, this is good for small market teams because he said you can sell hope to your fans coming into the season can believe that you have a chance of winning a cup over just as much as the powerhouses that can overspend you.
Which I understand why if you're an owner of a smaller market, you would love that.
Right.
I don't think that's smart business for pro sports leagues. I think that can only work in the NFL because the NFL is a beast on an island where all they do is print money and all they do is get eyes on their TV. But it's smart from a regional perspective, to your point. 30 markets think every given year, hey, we've got a shot here. But I usually determine success based on TV ratings. And dynasties sell. Bigger markets sell. And you look at the NBA, perfect example. You want the superstars going to the finals. You want LeBron there every single year. Yeah. Imagine if LeBron only went to the finals every 6 years instead of every single year. It wouldn't be as good for the league. Like, the fact that Crosby has not been in a cup final in 7 years is not good business.
Well, let me ask you this. As I love Lee Corso, College Game Day, and he likes to say, not so quick. You know, the salary cap came in 2005. Massive U.S. television deal in 2011. And even a more massive Canadian television deal in 2014.
Yeah, but that's the money. That doesn't mean that the numbers are there. Well, doesn't mean the ratings are there.
Wait a sec. The economics for Gary Bettman to have a cap and for the owners are going, wait a sec. We didn't have a cap. We couldn't get this kind of money. Now we got all kinds of money. Like, you think about how much the TV money's come up. So forget about the TV ratings. Somebody said we're going to pay this amount of money, and the owners are going, well, geez, that's pretty good.
All right, we'll continue with this conversation because I think it's an in-depth one. Masai Ujiri at 6:30. We've got some props, a puzzle to hit, teeing up game one tonight of the Cup Final. And, of course, we'll tee up game seven as well out in Golden State between the Warriors and the Thunder. Final hour up next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.